that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're frolicking through the pumpkin patch, selecting your gourd to carve up and spill its guts across your kitchen table. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those fine folks bring this show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to make DLC. You could be one of them. You can. You can help support this show as well at patreon.com/DLCpod. In exchange, you'll get some cool perks, including ad-free episodes, video versions of the show on demand, plus bonus content. Ladies and gentlemen, the bonus content is phenomenal. You've got your Feeling This show with Feeling This Fridays, Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talking about the feelings behind video games. An entire show. It's phenomenal. Plus, Wednesday, we have Paid DLC, where Lana Bashinsky joins Christian Spicer and myself talking about the stuff the patrons want to talk about, talking about their comments. This last week, it was all about the spooky video games and spooky movies. Our faves, the patrons' faves. You could be in on that convo by heading over to patreon.com/DLCpod, supporting the show. Oh, but this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. The guy who's into the second round! Or his team is, anyway. Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Have we ever learned what being the pumpkin king entails? Jack seems so proud of it. You know, I am Jack the Pump. Like, what do the pumpkins do? Where are his pumpkin subjects? I'm waiting for
somebody who is the pumpkin
movie.
King. You know, heavy lies the head that wears the crown. You know what I'm saying? And that's... For a guy who I feel like there's all these pumpkin responsibilities. You got to make the spices, disseminate the spices. You got to make the seeds, get the seeds all crunchy and delicious. I'm sure there's a lot of pumpkin related responsibilities as the king.
Pie, bread.
Pie? Sure.
Yeah. Spiced lattes. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I guess pretty busy. Pretty
terms of endearment to loved ones.
Hey,
pumpkin.
Patches where people can frolic while listening to this show. You know, Jack's got to get those ready.
All of it. Hey, we got a pretty fun show for you coming up. I think that the news is just goofy and delightful. It's going to be a fun one to dive into. Plus, we got some cool games that we have been playing. And ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome guest for you. One of our favorites. In fact, I don't need to introduce him. He's got his own theme song.
Who's that coming on the podcast today?
It's Anita Wabina.
They must be recording on a holiday.
Because it's Anita Wabina.
Who's going to talk about the games that they don't really want to play?
It's Anita Wabina.
He's dependable, dimensional, and so sincere. That's why we want to hear his games of the
year. It's Anita Wabina.
Ladies and gentlemen, from GameRant.com, it's Anthony Tomina.
I'm here.
He's here. I always forget the exact lyrics of your theme song, and then I hear it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, we are recording early this week, and also there's a game that neither of us wanted to talk about, and we felt like we needed to talk about. It's all very accurate is what I'm saying.
It is very accurate. And there is a whole song about what you do as the Pumpkin King. There's like a whole song about it.
What does he do? What does he say he does?
No.
Did we nail it with what we said?
He's Halloween Santa Claus.
Oh, that's right. Know, but that's why is that a Pumpkin King? I feel like there's a prequel movie where he and Scar were brothers.
Do not say these words. Apart. Tim Burton's listening and he's writing this all down.
And Danny Elfman's buff now, so he's angry. But I'm just saying, it's like he could just be the Halloween King, like the Pumpkin King.
Beetlejuice was successful enough that he is now going to be making two of everything.
The Nightmare
Try scissor hands. I don't know.
Somehow everything touches Tim Burton touches works. I don't understand it, but somehow
I don't know if that's true. You seen Dark Shadows?
I mean, I'm not saying it works for me. I'm saying it makes money. But anyway.
Okay, fair.
I feel like I don't remember that song that he sings, but I'm sure the lyrics are shockingly similar to what Christian and I said about what the pumpkin. And totally
they say this is Halloween a lot.
This is Halloween.
And because he's dead, he can take off his head. You know, we know all that. But why is he
this is frolicking through the pumpkin patch?
I listen to DLC to stay up at night. You know, classic.
All right, let's get into it. Let's start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments or questions or high fives, whatever you want to send us. We love getting your emails, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You could do all of that in another place as well. Our Discord is a fun place to hang out with other folks, send messages to us, to them, about video games, about whatever you like. The Discord is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Urge you to take part. It's a fun community of fun folks. But Anthony Taormina, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I think my selection for story of the week is going to be the Halo news. Changing of the naming and changing of the engineing.
Somehow we got even more Halo-y. 343, what's that? Oh, I know what it is. It's Halo. Now it's definitely Halo. 343, formerly 343, the artists, formerly known as 343 Industries, had a big moment this week. They put out a video kind of staking their intentions for the future of the Halo franchise. 343 Industries is changing its name to Halo Studios. And there are, by their reports, multiple new Halo games in development. And most notably, I think the mainstay Halo franchise, as Anthony indicated, is switching from their proprietary engine that they have used, the Slipspace engine. And now they are adopting Unreal Engine 5. We knew about this. They had mentioned this years ago, but this is like the first sort of here's our plan, and here's some video of what we've been working on in the engine to give you sort of a sense of it. This is not a game that they showed, but they showed this project that they worked on internally to sort of prove to themselves what the Unreal Engine 5 can do in the Halo universe. Three different biomes that they showed off. Some energy swords, Master Chief.
Water.
What do you think, Anthony? What do you think of Halo Studios and the future of Halo?
I don't know how to think, to be honest, because it's in the franchise for me is in a bit of a weird place. It seemed like over the last three games, it was kind of like, okay, here's 343's first game. Okay, we know that wasn't what you like. We're going to give it you what you like. Okay, here's our next one. Okay, that wasn't really what you wanted. Okay, here comes the next one. That really wasn't what you wanted? Okay, we're just starting from scratch. We're changing our name. We're doing a new... It just feels weird. I think, you know, the engine part makes sense because we saw this with CD Projekt Red where they said, hey, we're going to make another Witcher, but we're going to use Unreal. I believe Unreal. Instead of their engine, because it just seems to be easier for developers to hire and find new talent because they have, found it harder to get people on board and up to speed using an engine that they won't know unless they work at the studio, and then they leave and, you know, they got to find new folks. So finding people that know Unreal.
And in the video itself, they were explicit saying, hey, you know, we had to be a technology company, you know, building this engine and maintaining the engine in addition to being a video game developer. Like you're a tech company developing this software that's very technical. And like, what, we don't want to do that. We want to just be artists that are building a game or games. And I think that makes sense.
Well, and especially with Microsoft's reputation for using a bunch of contract workers that are only allowed to be there for, what is it, 18 months before they're cycled off to something else, because then they owe them more benefits and compensation. So if you're working on something that is universally known, being able to use that contract worker loophole, or however you want to frame it, is certainly better than like, oh, well, half of your time here is getting you up to speed on our engine. I know we could just hire you and let you become an expert in it, but we don't do that. So we had to do this instead.
It is weird, though, because I feel like the biggest franchises in the world, and I would consider Halo to be one of those. In my opinion, they should use their own engine. And they,
I mean, we've seen Master
distinct.
Chief's butt on TV. It has to be a big franchise.
Yeah.
You don't see it.
I feel like they have to look distinct, because Unreal, well, we could talk about a little bit in what we've been playing, but Unreal Engine has like some kind of trademark elements, some good, some bad, that I like to, you know, I like to fire up a Final Fantasy game and see their unique engine. And I, you know, Nintendo's stuff has always got its own vibe. I kind of wanted Halo to retain that instead of just looking like an Unreal Engine shooter. But
that's interesting.
If that's what it takes to be, you know, able to innovate and get to a place where, in my opinion, the franchise gets better, because, I was not a fan of Infinite's campaign. I liked its multiplayer quite a bit, but its campaign was really disappointing to me. And I feel like that was trend chasing. So getting away from that will be nice.
It is. Well, it's funny, first of all, that Halo Infinite couldn't be less so, right? It's Infinite. We're stepping away from that. I mean, they literally say in this video, Halo Infinite is the last of the old Halos, and now we're starting a new dawn, which is very funny. It's like Halo the Infinite one is the one that is a bookend. Okay, all right, Infinite. All right, that's not how that word works. It's also, it felt to me like this video could not have been more of an advertisement for Unreal Engine. It's like the Epic's like, thanks for the free lift, buddies. We appreciate all that awesome publicity you're doing about how great our engine is. Cause it was it's obviously a glow up of Halo with the schmancy new engine, but they keep talking about how great it is. Oh, this was just gonna make the game so much better, and here's how beautiful it could look with this. It's like, wow, free publicity for Epic. The thing that struck me about this is that it seems like, I mean, we all remember the initial reveal of Halo Infinite and the massive backlash they got of, hey, this was supposed to be the Xbox Series showcase franchise, and it doesn't look like you're pushing the hardware. It doesn't look sufficiently next gen for the hardware to be, you know, to show off what this new thing that I just spent $500 on can do. And they went, oh, right, we're delaying it for a year. We're going to make it prettier. And they did, and it was prettier. But it feels like they really took to heart this notion that Halo has to be real, real pretty. And I'm wondering if you agree with that, Anthony. Like, I know I think it's interesting, and I want to dig into this notion of their own proprietary engine. But just like, does Halo have to be visually spectacular?
I mean, I think for me, no. For the fanboy console wars, yes, because I don't think currently there is a franchise that the Xbox fans can kind of hang their hat on and say, this is the Xbox franchise, except for Halo, or besides
Gears, Halo. Gears of War.
Yeah, but we haven't seen Gears in a while, and also Gears, I would assume runs on Unreal still. The original ones, I assume
certainly had, did. Yeah,
I don't know for sure, but yeah. So you want to be able to say like, oh, you've got God of War, you've got, you know, Last of Us, Uncharted. Here is Halo, and Halo is the best we can do visually in terms of our first party games. For me, no. I think what Halo does really well is like the AI and the environments and the gunplay. That's what stands out about Halo to me. That's what makes it unique. So I'm worried about, you know, losing that. I'm not a developer. I don't know what you lose or gain by switching engines. I don't know if their ability to deliver that same kind of dynamic gameplay where the elites and the grunts are mixing and matching and you know, doing things that you think, wow, this is very clever. It makes it a little more dynamic than just they stand behind rocks and poke their heads up.
Yeah. Well, certainly the first Halo on the original Xbox was cutting edge visually at the time. And I think it was, I remember being very impressed and blown away by it at the time. And so it has that legacy. They reference that specifically in the video. Christian, I'm curious what you think about this as far as, you know, what Anthony said about, you know, should sort of flagship franchises have their own engine just specifically to stand out from their peers?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. I feel like Unreal can still make games that look very different. And so that's where the special sauce comes in. You know, how do they differentiate? Yeah, art direction and even, yeah, what graphical style they bring to it. And then being able to replicate the controls. You know, Halo had very specific feeling controls that felt different than other first-person shooters. So I would hope that they are competent enough to be able to use the Unreal Engine as their starting point and make it still feel like Halo. I just got a giggle out of this.
That's a great point. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think that's a great point, because that's, we always talk about the visuals with the engine, and justifiably so, right? That's what's powering the visuals, but it's also powering your inputs and your, you know, your response times, and the feel of the game is very much defined by how the engine reacts. And so you're right. I think it's a real, you know, that's one of the things I think that has, held Destiny back in certain ways, is that they've been stuck on this engine because they want Destiny to feel like Destiny, you know? Mm-hmm. Switching to an engine, it's, you know, one might worry that the feel will be messed up. And I think that's a great point, and one that's not mentioned enough when we talk about engines.
Yeah, and certainly possible, right? Gears of War feels different than other Unreal games, but I think it's going to require work. I just got a giggle about this announcement, though, and like, I picture the all hands company-wide email going out, and it's like, important all hands meeting coming up on Monday, and some developer is like, yeah, we're gonna work on that new IP we've been pitching. We got it, we're working on a new IP, baby. And they sit down and like, we are now called Halo Studios.
What games are we working on?
another announcement, the new IP skunk team is laid off.
Who knows what 343 means? That's still at the studio. We gotta call you the Halo Studios now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very intentional thing. There were rumors before that 343, artist formerly known as 343, was going to be kind of managing other Halo projects. While this video didn't explicitly reference that, the changing to Unreal also perhaps gives some credence to those rumors. This idea that all Halo games can be on Unreal, you can have an umbrella, perhaps, company managing various projects. There's also been, it's just internet chatter, but, oh, by making this on Unreal, it becomes much easier to port to PlayStation. It becomes much easier to port to Switch. Mm-hmm. I can't believe we're here recording another episode before the Switch 2 announcement. But it makes it easier to put on other platforms than a bespoke custom engine otherwise would. And Microsoft has certainly shown its willingness to bring big franchises other places. So I think the future of Halo
Halo would be the ultimate capitulation. right? Yeah. It would be the ultimate admission that, hey, we're multi-platform now, right? Halo on, I think Halo is the bridge too far. Every other franchise can go. I mean, even Gears of War, I think, on PlayStation would not shock me. Halo on PlayStation. And I don't, that isn't to say that they won't do it. I suspect Microsoft is fully willing to do that. But I think that would be the thing that finally melts the fanboys, right?
It would. Yeah, I think it would. I think it, I mean, we just saw the subtle, it started with the subtle hints of some Xbox games are going to end up on PlayStation, and people were put, you know, like they do when players switch teams, they're putting their Xboxes in the bonfires and filming their videos and saying, I'm done. That's so, yeah, right. I think, and those were, you know, they didn't even know what those games, and it turned out those games were, some of those were from studios that Xbox was going to get rid of.
And you don't
my talents to South Beach.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, 100%, the Halo switching would be, or not switching, but also being available on PlayStation. But at the same time, it benefits Halo, not necessarily Microsoft or Xbox. It benefits Halo to have a larger player base, have more people to play with. Because, yeah, core to Halo is that multiplayer experience, and you limit yourself by putting it on fewer platforms.
My biggest question for you guys is understanding there are multiple Halo games. Obviously, the mainline big next Halo, Infinity Plus One, I think they're probably going to call it, like I used to on the playground when I was
It's going to, you know, it's going to be called Halo.
You think it's just going to be no... combat continuing we're starting again.
They are gonna say, hey, let's look at God of War, Halo 2027,
you're probably
make the Showtime or the Paramount show canon. Master Chief has intercourse. It's him, Master Chief, and his son going off in
if you think about it, like, the lore is so convoluted at this point, and there's going to be people that, if you know, continue that story, didn't really pay attention to Infinite, don't know what's going on, are like, wait, hold on. I didn't play the, you know, the add-ons. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. They can just look, we're Halo Studios. We're making Halo. It's, you know, the Covenant are now looking for a Halo, and this is the story. There's no, like, back crazy. Yeah.
I actually think the next game is going to be called 343.
Oh,
in a real twist.
Halo 343?
No, just 343.
Just 343. Okay. Okay.
From Halo Studios comes 343.
Then they're going to workshop and then go, hold on, 343: a Halo saga.
A Halo story based on the novel by Sapphire. Anyway, I didn't get to my question, which is we know that the big mainline Halo game is going to be a thing, but if there are these other games, what would you guys like to see? What we've seen a Halo RTS. What other Halo things have we seen that aren't FPSs? Have there been others? There's the Halo RTS.
Not that I played.
Yeah,
there was the mobile Halo RTS, the console.
Is
Halo
there another?
RTS.
Should the Halo franchise, as it were, be expanded into other genres? Should there be the Halo RPG? Should there be the Halo, roguelite? What do you guys want to see?
I mean, no would be my answer. Yeah, because
okay.
We just talked about how convoluted you're going to have to tell them. It's like firing up Kingdom Hearts 3 and they're like, oh, you play Kingdom Hearts division sign plus asterisk? No. Well, you're not going to know what Donald's doing.
You have no idea what Donald's been up to.
So, yeah, having it be split, it's fine. But as we sort of learned with the Halo movie and then the Halo show, Master Chief. That's all people really care about is Master Chief. So you nail that, you're good. I think, you know, the Halo Wars, there are fans of that. So I could see that, you know, coming back and being a popular side project. But for me, anything outside of Halo, the shooter, just doesn't appeal to me unless, you know, you find something clever. Because it, even Halo Wars was just an RTS with Halo. You know, they did the same thing with Gears. They were like, we made XCOM Gears.
Right.
So I would rather they just focus on getting Halo right. And then, yeah, if Halo's just singing and going along, then yeah, you can try other projects. But let's get Halo right, because Halo, in my opinion, hasn't been quote unquote right for a while.
Christian, you agree with that? You want like let's just make this a first person shooter franchise exclusively, or do you think that the IP should be leveraged in other ways?
I agree with Anthony saying get the core right first. For me, I feel like these multiple studio thing might be more akin to a Call of Duty approach or a Ubisoft approach, where you have multiple studios, but they're supporting the main core thing. So I could see a Master Chief Halo game, maybe another studio supporting making an ODST mode or something like that, where it's a group of, you know, squad based something, but still a first person shooter. Someone else is working on the zombies mode, which is a you against the flood, you know, mode a la Call of Duty. Someone else is helping doing the major lift on the Battle Royale mode. Someone else is doing the major lift on the 6v6, because now it's 6v6, you know, map.
You're saying variations mode on FPS, just like do all the FPS variations.
Very much the way Call of Duty is run right now. We have a lot of studios covering a lot of different parts that all come together to make a whole that, you know, different people gravitate to different parts of COD, but it's all part of that main package.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I guess I don't have the allegiance to Halo that many people do, or even that I once did. I think I really enjoyed those games, and have enjoyed those. I enjoyed playing through Infinite. You know, it was fine. It was fun. Better than fine. But
you are undercutting your enjoyment. My
point is, I don't think that they just need to limit the IP to FPSs. I think it would be cool to have a great first-person shooter Halo game again. But hopefully they're, you know, will deliver that. But I do think it would be cool to have, you know, you start as a, you know, play a third-person action game as a Covenant Elite, or, you know, have a side-scrolling 2D game as a Grunt. Or I don't know, you know, like I think I'm not precious about any of that stuff. And I think there's fun things to be found in that universe that you could mine for other types of games. Like, let that be a thing. Why not? I think it's cool. And I understand the idea of like, well, if you're working on all those things, then it dilutes the talent that's working on the main thing. But that isn't necessarily true. You know, you can hire out. Part of that video was like, we're hiring everything. Please come help make us make Halo. Help us make Halo. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how the next Halo game is announced. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they have certainly put a lot of pressure on themselves, because they're Babe Ruth pointing to the stands right now and being like, we're going to hit the next one out of the park. So
the next one out of the park is going to be, they're just going to make Halo number one, Combat Evolved, in Unreal.
I'm sure people would be delighted by that.
That has to be the first thing.
I mean, the glaring thing we haven't even mentioned is like the footage that they showed, while it isn't a game and is just a, you know, tech demo, looks pretty good. I thought it looked pretty rad.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. So the three biomes they showed, if you haven't seen the video, is sort of a classic like Pacific Northwest style OG Halo, with, you know, cliffs and waterfalls and foliage and, you know, trees and stuff. Looked very, very pretty. A sort of futuristic snow landscape with a big, you know, Forerunners style architecture in it. And then the third one was like the flood homeworld, or a world that's been taken over by the flood, that's full of bulbous, gooey, icky pods. And all of them looked stunning. I thought, I mean, obviously Unreal Engine 5 is amazing. We didn't see any motion, any people running around on it or anything like that. But if that's their target visuals, I think the next Halo game is going to look real good. Probably on whatever next console Microsoft comes out with or doesn't come out with.
Yeah, I didn't really think Halo Infinite looked bad. You know, I was never of the mindset that it looked bad, and I think it will. I think if they would have stayed on this engine, and you know, Microsoft would have given them access to whatever the next dev kit is, the next game would have looked good on their current engine. But switch to Unreal Engine, I'm all for, and a better looking game is what you have to shoot for these days.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with some more Story of the Week. This episode of DLC is brought to you by BetterHelp. Christian, it's Halloween season, which means people are getting costumes and getting masks. And, you know, that kind of makes me think that sometimes I've felt like I've been hiding behind a mask. There are times when I don't feel like the person I present to the world is the same person that I feel like inside. You ever feel that way?
I do. And as you mentioned on last week's show, or maybe it was a Wednesday show, Halloween is also kind of the start of holiday season in general.
Yeah.
And I know for myself and a lot of other folks, there's a lot of great stuff in the holidays, but also it's a hard time during the holidays. And I think people have a hard time reconciling with that, while everyone else is always joyous, and whether it's seasonal or other reasons and other life events that have happened around this time. I think having somebody you can talk to about that and those feelings is important.
I agree. Yeah, it certainly helped me in the past. And therapy is a place where you can, you know, learn to accept all the parts of yourself, so you can take off your masks or, you know, feel more comfortable in these difficult times, this time of year that can be hard for some. Christian and I have talked at length about how therapy has helped us. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take off your mask with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DLC today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/DLC. BetterHelp.com/DLC. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
So we don't need to spend tons of time on it because it is further out. Well, maybe not. It's maybe as far out as the next Halo game. But speaking of next, we got an announcement that kind of showed up and then kind of went away and then kind of became an announcement. But it got announced in a kind of an odd way for a game that people have been clamoring for a sequel to for over a decade now, or I guess about a decade. And that is that we are getting a sequel to Alien Isolation. We mentioned this, Jeff. We do some short 1-minute videos on our Instagram, which is DLC Hype Train, and on our YouTube, which is at DLC Pod. I think we did I did a reaction to this kind of the day it was announced. But Alien Isolation is getting a sequel. This is a game that I think its reputation has only grown in the year since it came out. It kind of launched and people were like, oh, it's good, but it's scary. It's pretty punishing.
A decade ago, by the way.
It's
been a decade, Christian.
The AI can be difficult. You know, I don't know what's really happening with this, blah, 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 blah. But in that decade, I feel like Alien Isolation's reputation has only grown. And I'm sure Alien Romulus being great only helped. And seeing a follow-up to this game getting announced, I think is a really big deal. I have to imagine that it will only be, you know, have learned from the original release and also from all of the incredible horror games that have come out in that decade plus before Alien Tandem, Alien with a Friend.
Alien not isolated anymore. I'm sure when I say a decade ago, you're like, oh, it came out in like 98. No, it's 2014. That's a decade ago. And this obviously was the sort of true survival horror version of Alien. There's, you know, the everybody's inspiration from Alien usually is from the second film, where we get to have big Gatling guns and shoot aliens. And that's fun in a video game. But I think Alien Isolation showed, hey, a single alien can be terrifying and fun. This isn't a game that I loved. Taramina, did you?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
I reviewed it, yeah, and did not enjoy it.
Yeah, I did not enjoy it either, because it makes me feel real scared.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was, I just, yeah, the AI. I didn't like just, you know, you were like, am I clear? Am I clear? Okay, I'm coming out. Nope, it's right there. All right, here we go. And then you have to restart. That part just didn't appeal to me. I get what they were going for. And I feel like as a player or a fan, you kind of fill in the gaps with your mind of like, this is what I want. This is the alien, you know, this is the xenomorph. It feels real. But yeah. I just do not enjoy those stealth games or that stealth experience where you have no control over if you get caught. At a certain point, yeah, I just started like beelining for, okay, I need to get to that door and there's five rooms. I could search for resources or collectibles. No, I'm just running towards that door. I don't have time for this because I enjoyed the story. The story can, you know, the connections to the original franchise with you know, you playing as a Ripley,
yeah,
was cool for me,
believe it or not. I think the funniest thing about the, well, not funniest thing, but it's a bit ironic, I suppose, that there's excitement about a new Alien Isolation when it feels like we're getting kind of one of those this year, like with Alien Rogue Incursion. The VR game, the Alien VR game, it feels like is very, I obviously haven't played it and I don't know for sure how it plays, but it feels much closer to Alien Isolation than any other kind of game. No? Am I crazy?
I think we're going to be killing more than one alien in Incursion. I think it might probably be a little more alien. Yeah. Yes, I'm chomping at the bit to play it, but I think the reason people are more excited about Alien Isolation is you still look at VR attach numbers,
sure,
and you know they're not there still.
That's true.
And like I said, Alien Isolation, pretty much every year, maybe it took 2 years for it to happen, but for the last 8 years, pretty much every Halloween, it's on best scary games or games you miss that you need to play. It's been on, I think, the PlayStation Plus catalog. I think it might have been on Game Pass for a little bit. It gets great sales. It's deck verified. I believe it. I played it on my deck. I played it on my deck.
The scariest place to play.
It's actually the best way to play a horror game is like in a couch, pinned in a corner. Mm. You know, no one's behind you. You're playing on your handheld.
Your defensive perimeter has been established.
Yeah. No air vents are near you. You know,
you can run if you need to and still be playing.
Yeah.
obviously this, as you mentioned, is a ways off. This is just like, hey, we're working on it, early development, but pretty cool for fans of Alien Isolation from 2014. Cool that these franchises can get brought back after such a long absence, and we shall see. My parting gift, guys,
nope,
we buried the lead.
Nope.
Here,
story of the week.
You've jumped party way gift too far. Nope. You're ready to wrap it up.
Great.
I'm off to New York.
Have a great weekend today, everybody.
My story of the week is we sort of buried the lead because, as Christian mentioned last week, he called it, new Nintendo hardware announced this week. New Nintendo hardware, ladies and gentlemen. Clear your calendars. Move everything off your bedside table. You're going to want to have this Nintendo hardware right by your bed. It's Alarmo, everybody. Alarmo, the device that we all were clamoring for, a Nintendo-themed alarm clock. Alarmo will wake you up with up to 4 different Nintendo-themed songs and animations. But wait, there's more, because just a mere alarm clock is not enough for Nintendo to get in the game. Just the sound of waking you up, no, not enough, not cool enough, not futuristic enough, not Nintendo enough. No, we also have to have a motion sensor that's staring at you and seeing exactly if you're stretching or rolling over or sitting up. What are you doing in response to this theme song from Breath of the Wild? What has the Splatoon audio track done to you at 6 o'clock this AM? Are you rolling over? Well, guess what? You're going to hear some coins. Ba-ding, 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 ba-ding. You're going to hear some splat, 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 splat. Yeah, that's right. We're watching you, buddy. Don't you try to snooze. No snoozing. Get up or this thing is going to make more delightful sounds at you. It's alarmo, everybody.
That actually sounds like a good alarm clock. That just is your voice like, get up. What are you doing? What are you doing?
We are so pleased to announce DLCO, our new DLC-themed alarm clock where...
Woo! There it is. When my voice kicks in, you know it's time to get up. That's get right. out of bed.
You can whether select you... up to four different voices. There's the Spice Man... just screaming at you.
Get up, baby! Time to go!
Well, you sold it. Million copies already.
Yeah.
I would
story
love...
Story of the sleep. It's the story of your sleep. Story of your sleep. Gotta wake up, stop the sleep.
I would love it if Alarmo somehow announces before anything else... when the Nintendo successor console is going
only
to be revealed.
The people who have purchased Alarmo.
Uh-huh. It's like, it's a me! Switch to announcement later today. What?
Hey, huh? Listen! Yeah. Hey! Listen! This Switch 2 is coming!
That's Mickey Mouse?
No, that's...
That's Tingle.
Tingle.
It sounded like Mickey Mouse.
No. All right. Anyway, so do not make classic, fun of this incredibly
classic Splatoon voice there, Jeff. Important, classic that was Splatoon, my Splatoon voice.
That was. do not make fun of this incredibly important announcement from Nintendo, Anthony Taormina. Have you already pre-ordered? Only certain people can pre-order Alarmo. This thing is going to fly off the shelves this holiday season. I am actually leaving for New York City today. We're recording
to get
a little
one.
Early. Going to the Nintendo store.
Okay.
I mean, all of those things are true. And I'm going
announced
to
Alarmo.
New York.
Jeff was like, honey, we're going to New York.
Going to New York. My son, very excited to go to the Nintendo store. I'm going to be like, oh man, sorry, buddy. There's going to be a line around the block for Alarmo.
Maybe. Well,
no, it's already out there. You'll be good.
Yeah. So, there may be one upstairs in my child's room.
Do you have one already?
I do. Yeah.
Did they send it to you?
They did, yes. Nintendo sent me one.
Does he love it? Is he super happy
with
it?
He does love it. It's really neat. It's $100.
I know.
That's
crazy.
I mean, that's really your barrier to entry there. But it is very cool. The, we've only used it basically. My son was sick two nights ago, so it didn't really work. But we've used it once, and... the kind of motion control stuff, he wakes up like that anyway, so he's not necessarily somebody that needs an alarm clock. He as anyone that has children knows, children are your alarm clock. Alarm clock,
right?
Not necessarily.
And cost way more than $100.
Yeah.
Yes, but it is neat, the way that it will. We kind of tested it when we put it in his room, and we said, okay, we'll set it for 5 minutes from now or whatever. And the way it kind of sees him move, but he also shoots out of bed. So you don't get the same kind of like, I see you're moving. I'm going to make noise. Okay, you're up. I'm done. You can also just like turn it off. You don't have to rely solely on the motion stuff. But yeah, we set up a Mario one. Mario is his... He does like Zelda a bit, but Mario is his favorite. So we just set up the Mario one. I will say that you can very clearly see that it's like a rectangular screen inside a circular device. Yeah. So that's, however you might feel about that.
$100 seems...
Yeah, I don't really see a lot of people buying this thing. I'll write more about it if you want to read it, gamerant.com. But yeah, I think it's it's in that same realm of you just wanting to Nintendo-fy your environment with different things.
I mean, I feel like this could be an app. You know what I mean? This could be an app.
You could put it in a watch and you could sense your movements and make them.
I mean, obviously things. The sensing of the movements thing, I guess, is the big deal. But, you know, it's got Nintendo songs and visual. Like, I can make my phone wake me up with a Nintendo song, you know? Like, I don't want to say necessary, but necessary? it's an odd product.
I think, it's hard to say why they did. Well, I know why they did it, money. But it's hard to say, you know, what motivated them. Why to decide to do this? But I do think that there is kind of this Nintendo with like Pokemon Sleep and Pokemon Go and all of these things that they kind of want to.
But it's
want to be the first thing you think about when you wake up, and they want to be the last thing you think about when you go to bed.
Oh,
you're snuggling your Snorlax. I mean, most of these
when
things
you put
are
it
Pokemon.
That way, it seems so bad. It seems so corporate, gross. It baffles me that this is a $100 object that gives you four options. It's like I would assume
with more to come.
I would assume if I'm paying $100 this thing, it should have the entire history of Nintendo inside it as an option for me to select from when I should be able to get the entire musical library of every Nintendo game as an option to wake up to for $100. You know what I mean? Four things? Ring Fit is one of them?
So an Amiibo is what? $16, and it's a piece of plastic. The Game & Watch, it's also a clock. How much are those, Anthony? Like $60? $70? 50?
I don't know. I'm looking at my Zelda one right here.
I mean, they were also a chunk. I mean,
yes.
$100 is not nothing, but it's also, I don't know, video games are $70. This thing has motion sensing tech in it. Am I saying it's worth the money? Not for me, but that, I don't know, that price kind of makes sense.
I feel like the
$50 makes sense to me.
50, yeah, $49.99 feels like I gotta think about it, you know.
Maybe this is to prepare us for the next console price. No one will be upset when the Switch 2 is
$600.
The PS5 Pro prepared everybody for the Nintendo Switch price.
I feel like $29.99 and I'm like, oh, I'll think about it for my son. $49.99, I'm like, oh man, I don't know. For four, $99.99, and we're like, there's no universe. But I also feel like the difference between putting four songs in it and putting 40 songs in it costs Nintendo zero, you know? Like, I don't understand. The software side feels like the easy part. Whatever.
Yeah, it does feel like it needed to get out now to prepare for a holiday season, because if it would have just released like in February, you would have had less of this, like, okay, it kids can put it on their Santa list and they can ask for it.
It feels like something you'd see in the Sharper Image catalog and be like, that's a dumb thing that nobody will buy.
They're afraid that kids are going to say, I don't want a Nintendo Switch 2 for my birthday. I want an Alarmo. And they're like, no, we need you to want the Switch 2. So we can't have these two devices competing with each other.
Sure.
So we got to get the Alarmo out now.
That's right.
Because Switch 2 is 2025.
Well, they're also worried that the kids are going to be like, I want an alarm clock for Christmas, and they won't have a Nintendo-themed one to buy. They'll just buy any old alarm clock. Because kids, they love waking up to alarms. You know, it's like their favorite thing. And so if they don't they're not in that market, you know, if they don't have that niche covered, they're just leaving money on the table. So I get that.
I do love the way – oh, go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Christian.
I love the way you all both think that this is for kids and not for 45-year-old adults who grew up with Nintendo that have eight versions of every 3DS and bought the Echoes of Wisdom exclusive Switch Lite. Like, come on.
Well, adults need to be able to set at least 17 alarms in 2-minute increments.
That's right.
Not when the coins keep going until you get up. You got to get make that money. That's what Mario's telling you.
But yeah, I agree about the whole, you know, Kids don't. Like I said, if you have a kid that needs an alarm, I envy you.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yes. 100%. I mean, I guess a teenager maybe. But yeah, if you're giving this to an 8-year-old that isn't already up at 5:45 throwing things at your face in bed, then you have a different kid than I have. You know?
No, my kids need alarms because they go to the coal mines at 3:40 every morning. They got to get up.
Ba-ding, ba-ding, ba-ding.
Yeah, exactly.
My wife and I do the whole. It's not my turn. You, yeah. Go get her.
Yeah, yeah.
Just entertain yourself with Mario. Don't worry, kid. Mom and dad still love
then
you.
He'll never wake us up, and it'll be like 2 a.m, and it'll be like, I've got 140 SARS.
As long as we're all clear as to what's going to be on Christian's top five of the year. As long as we're all clear,
the one souvenir Jeff brings back from New York. I cannot wait for you to come home with this thing. I don't know. It seems silly. It's so expensive. Cut to next week's episode.
No universe.
You hear it in the background. Yeah, ba-bing, ba-bing, ba-ding.
It's going to be all over those shelves. First thing you see when you walk in. Oh,
Jeff, $3,500 Vision Pro comments that $100 alarm clock is too expensive.
Well, at least with a Vision Pro, I can.
They can both sit on your cell.
You could just put an alarmo in your virtual space.
That's right. Virtual alarmo. All right. Let's move away from that topic and talk about games we've been playing. But first, we're going to take another break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after these messages. All right. Let's get into the games we've been playing on the playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us.
Anthony Taormina.
Yes.
I like saying metaphor rifantasio. Mm-hmm. I like saying it. I like saying metaphor rifantasio.
Yeah, last night I had to tell my wife, was like, what's this game you're playing? And I was like, I don't want to tell you.
Metaphor rifantasio.
Yeah, she did a couple of those. Excuse me? One more time?
You have to say it while
Persona
like,
6. Sorry, I kept coming out weird.
You have to say it while gesticulating wildly like you're in the center of a three-ring circus. Metaphor rifantasio.
Yes, 100%. It's like your tuxedo mask from Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been playing it though.
I have been playing it.
Yeah.
So to preface this, I am not a big SMT or Persona fan. I don't dislike the games at all. I just, they are daunting.
Yes.
You know, these 80 plus hour RPGs, lots of, it stresses me out, this idea of forming bonds between your characters, and especially in the Persona games, like, who do I want to hang out with? Oh, you're telling me I have to do a test today? I'm going to Google the answers before this test comes up because it stresses me out because, you know, the games can be difficult. All that being said, I try all of them. I give them a fair shake. And this is a very good one of those. Despite the fact that it has a unique name, it is still of that same lineage. So if you are a Persona fan specifically, I think you'll be super satisfied with this game. It is set in a fantasy world. It is called Metaphor, and boy, is it steeped in metaphors. You know, they talk about this idea of like there are different magical kind of races. They call them tribes, and certain tribes are treated less than other tribes. Metaphor,
sure.
You know, so but the kind of overarching story is this idea that the king of this world has, you see, he's been murdered. You see who murders him, but all these other people don't know that he's been murdered, but they kind of suspect. And the prince, who would have been his successor, is like, you think he's dead, or certain people think he's dead, but you know, as the main character, that he's actually like in a curse coma. He's been put in a coma because of a curse. So the guy that has that you see has killed the king. I'm not spoiling anything. You see this before you even hit the title screen. He is kind of vying for power, but you play a character that is connected to the prince, knows he's actually alive, but in this coma, and you're trying to help him. You defeat the guy that put him in the curse, and you assume he'll come out of the curse coma. It feels weird to say this out loud, by the way. So that's kind of like the impetus. But
does it feel weirder than saying Refantasio?
No, because you don't usually say the game title out loud.
I do.
All that much? Constantly. You've never played games with Jeff.
Yeah, you play Smash Brothers with Jeff, and Jeff's like, Smash Brothers! Every time.
No, if you play Smash Brothers with me, I'm just sitting around saying, Refantasio!
But yeah, so you're off on this adventure. That's kind of like the reason that you're on this adventure. It is a kind of magical world. There are characters that have like little horns growing out of their heads, or they have cat ears or animal looking ears, just sort of walking around. But it is, at its core, it is a very Persona-esque combat system. So instead of kind of calling forth a persona, you are, it's like this weird scene where you rip your heart out of your chest and then it puts a kind of magical
metaphor
being
metaphor.
Rip your heart out of being in front of you. That is the archetype. So there's like the warrior, there's the mage. Your character starts off as the seeker, and they have different magical attacks. Basically, if you've played a Persona game, you know exactly what you're getting. As you start to get into this stuff, then you can do your basic, okay, I'm going to do my melee attack with my melee weapon, or I'm going to use my archetype, which will manifest in front of you, to do magic at the cost of MP. So they'll do, you know, wind or fire or ice and attack the enemies. And when you expose or exploit weaknesses, you can have the potential for getting additional turns. So you'll have these little turn icons. So let's say you have three characters in your party. You'll usually get three turns to attack the enemies. But if you exploit a weakness, you might get an additional turn on the character that exploited the weakness. It is standard JRPG fare, especially for Atlas's brand of these games. So if you were on board for any of those prior games, if you have been playing, you know, Persona 3 Reload this year, or you just were looking forward to the next game after Persona 5, or you're a SMT fan, this game is going to be super up your alley. It is steeped in that, but it's a unique universe. You know, it's not doing the kind of high school kid thing. It has, you know, it's a little bit of the kind of Elden Ring vibe of, not the same in terms of like the gameplay, but it's using a different wrapper around the experience. So this fantastical setting instead of more like gothic or kind of, you know, kids at school. But solving murder.
This isn't the game that's going to turn a non-Persona fan into.
I don't think so. The two things that I don't know how Persona 5 handled it. I can't remember, but there are difficulty settings when you start, and there is straight up a story difficulty. Because I know that Persona 5, a lot of people said there's this point you'll hit like a real difficulty ramp, or where if you haven't been grinding. So there's that, but also when you're walking around the open world, it does this really cool thing where you can attack enemies. If you like hit them from behind, it'll stun them. So then when you enter battle, they'll lose their first turn because they're stunned. But as you level up, if you are over leveled over certain enemies, you can just hit them in the open world. They will die and you'll get all the rewards you would have got. So the XP, oh, that's the cool money. So, you know, in your classic JRPG, the enemies are on the world. Instead of initiating turn-based battles with everything, and you're like, okay, I have to do the scene to enter battle and do the attacks, blah blah blah. If they're lower that level than you, you will just hit them. So it's kind of a little bit more, of an active combat system.
A little streamlined, yeah.
Yes, but it is still, you know, you're waiting on your turn, you're choosing what to do, you have MP that manages what abilities you can do, you have different, you know, sort of buffs and debuffs that you can put on your team or the enemies. The boss designs are crazy. One of the first bosses you fight is just like a little tooth. You just look like a little tooth. Yeah, it. I mean, it, it, it.
What's yeah, that a metaphor for?
But yeah, it is like it has all those crazy designs, lots of care, you know, you're gonna build connections with the characters, you're meeting people that have similar aims to you or conflicting aims to you, and it's steeped in all that stuff. So long story short, if you were waiting for this game, you're probably already playing it and you don't need me to tell you to play it, but it is one of those excellent games that they make, and I can 100% appreciate everything about it. The music is great. It's different. It's not just like, okay, we're doing Persona music. There's like a, you know, more of a kind of operatic kind of elements to it. It does play into that more magical setting really well. It's very flashy. Sometimes the too flashy in terms of like the menu transitions and everything. There's a lot of style. It's super sure. Slick.
Yeah. That's their whole jam.
It is 100%
something.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like maybe they were just like, oh, people like these. Well, we are no restraint now.
Yeah.
But if you like that, then it is going to be right up your alley. I don't really have any criticisms of it from an outsider's perspective. There's nothing that I see. It just, the idea of spending 80 to 100 hours in the middle of the fall gaming season is kind of crazy to me, especially with, you know, a more traditional my style RPG in Dragon Age right around the corner. I've probably put about like dozen hours in. You spend like the first, I don't know, hour just walking around and getting dialogue. It takes a while to get into the combat. Once you get into it and you kind of learn what it's doing, it does have so many similarities. You can say, okay, well, this is just Metaphor Rifantasio's version of this. This is just Metaphor's version of this, or this is an upgraded or better version of this. But the cool thing I will say that they do combat wise with the, you were sort of limited in other Persona games or SMT games where certain characters just filled a role. You can put the archetypes on anybody. So if you want your main character to be the mage, you want them to be the healer, whatever you want them to be, they can be. As far as I know, I don't know if it, and then those archetypes upgrade as you use them more, and that when they hit certain levels you can unlock I think more advanced version of the archetypes, and having similar archetypes on your team, they can do synergy attacks and do a lot of crazy stuff. So it gets more complex as you go, as you would hope it would, in that lineage of game.
And there's a 5-hour demo for folks that are curious about it.
Yeah.
And the save carries over. It's the first 5 hours of the game, and your save will carry over into the main game.
Christian, I feel like you're the Persona fan of the three of us. Are you tempted by Metaphor Rifantasio?
Yeah, very much so. I Persona 3 I finished. Persona 5 I don't remember if it was the grind that finally got to me or not, but for whatever reason, I just kind of fell off of that game. I really enjoyed my time with it. I think few games have the style that, you know, this lineage has. So I'm super excited about it. I just haven't found the time for it yet. I've had the demo installed on my computer since it came out. Haven't just spent the time with it yet, but I like this for, you know, as Anthony talked about, I like the idea of tweaks to a system and in a new type of environment. I think this version of a fantasy setting is super exciting. Jeff, you always talk about liking turn-based combat. I like what this team has done with that over the years. These tweaks sound cool. And I like that everything is in a Tolkien fantasy world, you know, and I really like seeing this approach to what high fantasy, quote unquote, can be. Yeah. So I'm super excited about it. I'm sure I'll play it at some point. I just haven't found the time to sit down with it yet.
It does feel like a Dark Souls to Sekiro, or a Warcraft to Starcraft. It's like we're still doing what we do, but we're doing it in a new environment, a new IP, new milieu.
Yeah, 100%. I do think if you were looking for like the Persona 6 level leap in terms of technology, it still looks like those games, for better or for worse. I think you either are in on that art style or the visuals, and it does look a little bit dated, I'll say that. So if you were like, oh, what's the future of these games supposed to look like?
This is still the
here and now of
gotcha.
Them.
All right. Well, that's Metaphor Rivantazio. And it is on Anthony's playlist. Both of you guys have been playing the Silent Hill 2 remake. Christian, let's start with you and talk a little bit about it. I know we talked a teensy bit on I think a Wednesday show, or maybe it was one of our 1 minute social media posts. But I'm curious to hear what you think of Silent Hill 2 remake.
Set the stage. I am not a Silent Hill lifelong fan the way
I
have
his hills loud.
Oh, give me a loud hill, please. I want it to be like hill. Give me a green hill.
He wants a hill that's alive with the sound of music.
Thank you very much, Maria. Even Silent Hill 2, I have distinct memories of watching my brother do most of the playing. I don't know if we were doing life or level or what at the time, but his main system was the PlayStation. That is how we were playing, these games back then. So I didn't even play all of Silent Hill 2 myself when it came out 5 years ago. Much longer than that. Resident Evil has been the horror franchise that I've kind of grown up with, and I've played all of those remakes and have that affinity for. And seeing these trailers, I think we talked about it when they showed it at one of the conferences, they're every week now, one of the PlayStation reveal things when they showed Silent Hill 2 for the first time. I didn't think it looked great. I like Bluebird Team's past games. I thought I had a lot of fun with Medium. I thought was, really interesting and scary and fun ways in terms of what they were going for in that game, and Layers of Fear. And then there was the Cyberpunk one that was probably my favorite.
I know what you're talking about.
The voice actor was the guy from Blade Runner too.
Rutger
very good
Hauer,
game.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
I'll look it up when I'm not talking, and then I'll yell it while somebody else is talking. but I really enjoyed that game. And so I kind of on this awkward position of like, well, what I've seen of Silent Hill 2 remake so far hasn't
Observer.
Looked great. Observer, thank you. Yes, I really liked that game.
Yeah.
But I had
really
a lot
cool
of fun
game.
With the team. Yeah. What was it?
I said it was a really cool game. Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with the team's other games. So I kind of went into this a little, we'll see. I really like this Silent Hill 2 remake. I really enjoy this game. And I am not as far through it as I would like. We are recording a day and a half earlier than we normally do, because Jeff needs to go to New York to get an Alarmo. So we had to push the recording.
It's the only place to get it.
My Alarmo went off and said, we're recording DLC when? so I'm not quite as far into it as I would otherwise like, plus life stuff. Steam says I'm 4.5 hours into the game, and I just finished the what are they, Anthony? The wood, not Woodboro. That's Scream. Woodside Apartments, I think.
Okay.
So it's like kind of the first big space you you go into. Folks remember that game. And this has made it bigger than it was before. And what I really like about the Silent Hill 2 remake so far, and this is I've said this before in other games, I spend a lot of time walking. You can run. You have a run button. But the environment, the vibes, the feeling of the game is so oppressive in a good way. It has the fog, it has the creepy aesthetic that folks remember from Silent Hill 2 originally, and now it's more of a feature than a bug. I think even originally the fog was part of the aesthetic, but it was also done because the console couldn't handle the game that they were trying to make without all that fog, kind of like Turok back in the day on N64. But now the fog is really just used to create this atmosphere and create this sense of unease that even out in the open, nowhere is necessarily safe. And now in the, I think it's Woodside, in these apartments, there are more rooms than I remember. It's a bigger environment than I remember in the original game. So you're exploring more areas going through this place. And the idea of Silent Hill 2 itself, which I will not spoil its narrative, it's very interesting in the sense that, you know, why are you doing any of this stuff, right? You're like a regular dude who stumbles out into the world trying to find their wife. That's the initial setup. But for any other person, the first time you see one of these creatures, you'd be like, nope, out of here. This is clearly, but yeah. It's not. The whole world is turned upside down, right? Everything isn't what it seems or feels. The other human beings that exist in this space are all interesting and quirky. And I think what Bloober Team's managed to do in terms of updating while giving it a free roaming camera, right, versus the static kind of tank control of the original and of that era, works really well here. Graphically, it is stunning. I'm playing on PC, so it does suffer from some traversal stutter, as it is now kind of known to be called, but nothing that's interfered with my enjoyment of the game. And it's just, for this 4.5 hours I'm into it, paced really, really well. It is just such an atmosphere and such a perfect spooky place, and playing with headphones and the 3D sound design when the radio cackles in, it does all of the things right that I'm looking for in this type of game. And I am playing on easy and I am loving it so far. Really, really loving it.
Anthony, you're also playing Silent Hill 2 Remake.
I am. So right off the top, Christian mentioned it. So I have put Silent Hill 2 Remake on hold. Hopefully, so they will patch that stuttering, because that stuttering drives me nuts. It's the same. It's similar to what the Dead Space remake had going. It's like you need to have them compile the shaders before the game loads or whatever. You know, I don't know. Digital Foundry actually just put out a video as we're recording this Saturday, so you can kind of see what we're talking about. It's something that I was alluding to with Unreal Engine. It's something that happens with a lot of Unreal Engine games. So, but I the reason I'm putting it down and I want to wait for the update is because I really, really like the game and I don't want it to kind of interfere with my enjoyment of it. But it has those vibes. It has the kind of creepiness. It has so many things about the way that it creates this sense of place and the little noises you hear and the kind of the fog around you. It is really very cool. I think it is an excellent game. And the reason I'm pausing is just because I don't want the stuttering to interfere with me.
That's valid. And I'm glad that we have the sort of range of reactions to that, because it sounds like Christian didn't really bother you, but people should be aware, and it sounds like they're working on a patch, right? They're aware of the issue.
Yeah. So. You have to imagine that anybody that releases a game, is that's going to happen for sure.
Yeah. So in some games, patches are more or less successful for dealing with this issue.
Yeah.
For me, and I think it's been worse in some spots than others. And like I said, I'm only in, 4.5 hours into the game so far. So maybe it becomes more egregious later. It doesn't bother me as much in this game, even than Dead Space when it first launched, because it's not a fast-paced game. So I'm kind of just accepted it, but would it be better without it? 100%. Yes. And I've heard it's not as prevalent on the PlayStation version of the game. You know, you take a little bit of a graphical hit choosing performance or fidelity mode, which last Friday's Feeling This was Alex Solman and I were talking about the
not
ideas.
Not if you got $700, you don't have to make that choice anymore.
For a lot of games, you still do, because not all games are announced for PS5 Pro.
What did support. I spend the $700? I could have gotten 7 Alarmos.
But this game on PC, aside from that, it has DLSS, Jeff. It has ray tracing. It has all of those things that we like. And what I also really like about this game graphically, and what I think Bloober Team did really smartly, is it's not photorealistic. You know, it is, it's not Echoes of Wisdom style graphics, but it is this other world, not even otherworldly, but there's an artistic approach to a realism here. It's not just we're going for photorealism, especially with some of the other characters that you meet in the world. And I think that translation from OG original to now these modern graphics works really, really well for the approach they took.
Awesome. Well, that's Silent Hill 2 Remake. It's on Christian and Anthony's playlist this week. Anthony, you have one more game, another spooky season.
Another remake.
Yeah.
So I've been playing the Until Dawn remake. I just wanted to kind of experience and see like what's going on with it. Mm-hmm. As far as like my personal love of those games, I have really grown to love the Dark Pictures anthology. So I'm a big fan of that. So like the sorry if you can hear that. That's my cat. With his can of food.
His can of food. I was like, it sounds like someone's dragging a plate across the floor.
I keep spraying them.
It's fine.
It's spooky totally fine. Season, Jeff. Spooky Let it happen.
We're adding in sound effects to your podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
He's trying to dig for as much as he can. But yeah, so I really like Until Dawn kind of kicked it off for me. It reminds me a little bit of the kind of Dark Castle in the old, you know, when those movies would come out, Ghost Ship, House of Wax.
Yeah.
13 Ghosts. So having those every year was really fun. I think they kind of have stepped away from doing them annually. I think currently they're working on Little Nightmares 3, but Until Dawn really kicked it off for me. So I really, really like that game. This remake, does it feel a little unnecessary? Yes, because Until Dawn was a really impressive game and it's still currently available. If you're on PC, obviously, you know, this is the option. It does look super impressive, but the original game looked very impressive. You saw Rami Malek and Hayden Panettiere, and they looked like themselves. But what's cool about these games is the ability to kind of influence the outcomes. They call it the butterfly effect. So you choose the door or the window, and which one you choose determines maybe the character scrapes their leg going out the window because there was broken glass, but the door was locked. So, they would have died. So it has all of that. The camera is like over the shoulder now in this one. So versus it was like pulled really far back, or it did kind of those static camera angles. But yeah, it is certainly one of those things where they've made subtle changes, but it's still the same game. The intro is a little more informative, I guess. It kind of leads you into what's happening. The original game, when you jumped into the game, you were kind of like, who are all these characters? What's happening? It subtly gives you some hints as to what's happening, but it's still mostly the same experience overall. I think most people are going to play it because they've probably heard, they've done some things with an ending to hint at more Until Dawn. That is there. Yes. I watched it. I'm not going to play through the whole remake just because there's too many things to play, but I'm enjoying it and remembering and then, kind of acquainting myself with everything, but the games for me, I've always enjoyed this idea of everyone just wants everyone to survive. Sometimes I'm just like, why don't I pick this way? This
let
way
him
seems,
die.
Yeah.
Let them die.
You know, you're like, this perfectly good hallway is well lit and looks, and this dark hallway looks like tetanus waiting to happen. And I'm like, let's see tetanus. I will say that because it's no longer on PlayStation, or it is no longer on, was it a PS4 game? You don't have the gimmick of like, keep your controller completely still.
Right.
You don't move your controller. Now it's like this weird kind of ovular like circle and thing. And then you got to keep an icon inside there and it'll like wiggle out of it. You just kind of have to hold it in place. Because in the original game, it was like stay completely still, and you're just like, I'm putting the controller down.
Don't let my cat drag a plate across it.
It's true, 100%. But yeah, it's I feel like if you haven't played Until Dawn, this is the the best way to play it, but also Until Dawn Original still exists and it is still a good game. So it's really how much you are willing to pay, I guess. You know, if you want to pay the $60, I think it is, for the game, or if you're on PC and you never experienced it, you want to experience it with like all the bells and whistles. It does have, you know, DLSS, and it has some ray tracing, and it looks real, real good. I know that there's been some comparisons to the original and how they maybe the facial, you know, features look different. I assume they're just working on the original work. They couldn't, you know, now Rami Malek has an Oscar. He doesn't need to show back up for Until Dawn. So yeah, and I understand that they're probably working with all the original stuff and they had to kind of make do with what was available to them. But for what it is, it's still, I don't know. I look forward to all the Dark Pictures games, but like I said, Until Dawn is the original one, and in my opinion, the best one.
It is there weird, though, how it ends with Alarmo going off. Like, that's what happens
all,
at Dawn.
It was all in a dreamo. So that's Until Dawn on Anthony Taormina's playlist. I want to talk about a game that I've been playing this week. Another edition of Jeff's Roguelite of the Week, or alternatively, Jeff's Card Battler of the Week. I certainly have a type of game that I am drawn to, but this one's, I think, a real special one. I'm excited to share this one with the audience. If you've not heard of this game, it just was released. It's called Dice-O-Mancer. Dice-O-Mancer. This is a first-person card battling game with a really awesome aesthetic. Hopefully, if you're seeing the video version as a patron, you're getting some cool visuals from Christian showing how unique this game looks. It's all hand-drawn art, almost looks like an old-timey cartoon, very simplistic line drawing, almost like a sketch aesthetic. I really like it. It is so different looking, so unique, so it has its own identity, which I really love. And it, you know, it's kind of got this kind of pastel, sort of muted, faded, almost painted watercolor look to it. Really, really cool. And you're in first person and you've got a bunch of cards. You're going, like many roguelites these days, post Slay the Spire, I guess. I'm sure games did it before Slay the Spire, but Slay the Spire is the best example of that node to node, you know, branching flow chart, you know, the flow chart node to node. I'm going to go to the next place. Maybe that next place is a treasure that I'll get. Maybe it's a story beat. Maybe it's a merchant. Most often it's going to be a fight. Go to the fight. This time it's sort of that first person, like old school Might and Magic style, where you're staring at the monsters who are just kind of lined up in front of you, and you're doing you're playing cards to fight them. And one of the cool things aesthetically is that when you play a card, it doesn't just have the card effect go off. It literally will trigger a cool first person animation. So for example, there's a card where you shoot a crossbow and you play that card, and then first person shooter style hands that are in this cool, you know, cartoon aesthetic raise up in front of you holding a crossbow and shoot it. Or, you know, a punch will literally be a fist swinging, or you play a block card and a literal shield is raised up in front of you. It's really a neat aesthetic. I just think the world of this aesthetic. But that's not even the coolest part of Dice-O-Mancer. You also have really interesting card play. So you've got this deck of cards in front of you, and you have mana that you can use that, you know, in like most card games, there's a cost on the card. You have a certain pool of mana. You play that, you know, cards until you use up your mana points. Here, there's a really interesting twist on that, where some cards are color coded. Think Magic the Gathering with, you know, fire type or water type, whatever. You know, they're color coded in certain ways. And you have to charge your mana with that color type before you can play that card. How do you do that? Well, you use another card that is of that type and use it to fuel your mana of to color it that kind. So you can use a card as a resource, not playing the card, but using it up to charge your mana up. And it's really cool. It creates a lot of interesting decisions that you're making of, oh, do I want to use that card or what do I want to use it as a color charger? It's sort of like lands would be in Magic the Gathering, where, you know, you need a certain colored land in order to play that color of card. Very clever, very cool, wonderful decision making. But Jeff, you say, you're describing a card game that is called Dice-O-Mancer. That doesn't make any sense. Why would a card game be called Dice-O-Mancer? Well, let me get to the coolest part of Dice-O-Mancer. This is where the game goes from being awesome to being mind-blowing, in my opinion. Dice-O-Mancer is a card battling game, but some cards allow you to roll dice, and there will be a card that has a type of die in the sort of classical Dungeons & Dragons style. Well, it'll be a D4, a D6, a D8, D12, D20. And when you play that card, it will allow you to use your dice roll to either augment or replace any value on the screen. So, do you want to change your enemy's HP? You can. Do you want to change your attack of a card's attack value, a card's block value, its mana cost? Anything you want, literally any number on the screen you can mess with. And that's just the standard ability of those cards. You're always able to do it. It's not some crazy special thing when you get those kinds of cards. And the better cards have different dice values on them. So for example, if I've got like a D4 or a D6 and I know I'm going to get a very small number, I'm probably going to use that to change my opponent's HP down to a low number. So it's effectively a really powerful attack because they had, 15 HP and now they've got 2. And it's so cool the way they do it, because you literally play that card and it shows you, it highlights every single number that's on the screen. Your HP, your mana, the enemy's HP, their mana, the attack values of all your cards in your hand, every single number that's on the screen. And you hover over the number you want and it replaces that number with like a scribbled out scratch, which is it feels very powerful. It feels OP in the best possible way, and it feels like the ultimate cheat. You're able to just scratch out a number and replace it with the number you want. Now, there's some fun RNG element. There's some risk because, like, what are you going to roll? But then there's other cards that allow you to have what you would call in Dungeons & Dragons advantage or disadvantage, where you get to roll multiple die and pick the lowest of the value or the highest of the value between those dice. So you're able to like further leverage your cards to ensure cool values. And sometimes you're replacing the number altogether and sometimes you're adding to it, which is really fun because it's like, oh, I can add a D6 to my attack. Heck yeah, I'm going to do that. It is the coolest thing. And they have some really smart ways of balancing it. So for example, enemies that you'll fight have different bars of health. So you'll have an enemy who has like 4 different health bars, 12, 8, 15, 6. So that it's not just, oh, it's a 50 health thing that I can turn into a 2. It's like, no, I'm going to attack a specific health bar and change that number. So they mitigate your ability to just easy mode everything, which I think is very, very smart, but it's still gives you what feels like ultimate godlike power and interesting decisions, because it's like, ooh, I'm still going to have to whittle down his health a couple of those bars, but I can make one of the bars into a very low number. And the cool thing too is that you have to decide which value you're going to alter before you roll the dice. So there's a bit of a risk. It's like, Are you going to roll a D20? Maybe you'll raise the value. You're hoping you're going to lower it, but maybe you'll raise, you know, it is so cool. It feels really different and OP, and just the basic card mechanics and actions that you can do with the cards are very different than I've experienced. And I'm a guy who plays lots of these kinds of games, and the card, just the pure actions that they do. There's a lot of cards that give you choices. So you play a card and it's like, do this or that with that one card. There's a lot of cards that like proc something that's going to happen later. It's a very, very cleverly designed, just pure card battler without this dice mechanic, but layering on the ability to just futz with any number you want in the game makes it feel really special and cool. I think this game is so neat. It's only $15 on Steam. It's called Dice-O-Mancer, and it really blew me away from the aesthetic, from the basic gameplay, the challenge, and then this very novel idea of using dice to completely alter the games in very, very powerful ways. I just am over the moon for Dice-O-Mancer.
End of the year, Jeff, I need you to compile. We need to do this as a bonus, right? We do our top five favorites of the year. Yeah. I need you to do a rank your top five of Jeff type games.
Yeah, maybe. Because yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm very curious, and I'm not trying to say this game doesn't or
wouldn't
does.
Wouldn't that just be his top five, though?
That's true. What are your favorite games that you like, though?
Right. No, because I feel like Jeff flirts with all of these. What I'm curious is which of these keep you, you know, around for the long haul. Because I feel like point perhaps of these rogue type games is the longevity in the play style. You're able to unlock more as you go. Like Rogue Legacy 2 is a different game 8 hours in than it is 20 minutes in. 20 minutes in it, I think it's intentionally frustrating. Right. 8 hours in, you feel like a god. So I'm curious at the end of the year, Jeff, how you would stack rank your rogue type card battlers of the year.
Certainly happy to do that. I mean, I think this one feels really special. It feels really, really cool. It's got, you know, there's a number of them that I've talked about this year that are like, hey, this is doing what these games do really, really well. This one, it feels like this is doing what no game does. You know, it's just doing something completely unique and interesting, and that's what makes it feel special to me. So, yeah, I think Dice-O-Mancer, I mean, we'll see how much more, you know, how it sticks around in my playlist as more games come out through the end of the year. But right now, it's ranks very high for me. I think it's really cool.
I do love that it's bright. The aesthetic is cheery. Not to say that it's whimsical, but like a lot of in my head, the style of game is often bleak.
Well, that's another thing I didn't bring up is that it's kind of got this almost storybook thing. Like the premise of the game is that you left your house to go fishing, and then you got tangled up in this nonsense, and you fight things like a duck. You know, you'll fight a duck, you know, but it's a pretty mean duck, you know? So it's got this level of whimsy that I also really enjoy. So again, that's Dice-O-Mancer, and it's pretty high on my playlist. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Anthony Taormina, it's always so much fun when we have you on the show. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Of course. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you're doing.
Well, GameRant.com is where I editor-in-chief-eyes the content. we mentioned Alien Rogue.
This hasn't been editor-in-chiefed enough, Anthony. You must editor-in-chief it more.
That needs an apostrophe. So we're publishing over the next few weeks, I think is the plan, these series of developer diaries with the Servios, the Alien Rogue Incursion studio. So if you're curious, you know, if you're listening to this, you probably are at least aware of VR. I assume you're maybe a fan.
Day 28, trapped in a spaceship with an alien. Not looking good for me.
No, yeah, not diaries from within the game, but the developers talking they're making of the game. But
Day 28, trapped in a spaceship making a game.
So yeah, that's something to kind of, we posted the first one just a few days ago, so that's on GameRat as well. And I went to the zoo and saw the Pikmin at the zoo. So if you want to read about my experience there, GameRant.com.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I write a newsletter about video games. People can find it at christianspicer.substack.com. I was working on one about who these remakes are for, as I'm really enjoying Silent Hill 2. I think I might have talked about that last week. Then, Jeff, I hadn't deleted that yet, but there's an interesting conversation going on in our Discord based off of last Wednesday's paid DLC show, where it came up that Lana never played BioShock.
Yeah.
And we talked about like, oh, I guess that's a horror game. And our community was like, it's definitely a horror game. And then I chimed in with like,
I was the one who said it's definitely, you guys were like, meh.
I know. And then the Discord, people were like, yeah, it totally is. You know,
Jeff is,
there's
right.
A jingle. Yeah. There's a jingle about Jeff occasionally being accurate on some things from time to time.
Jeff was right.
I could tell you were looking for it. There you go. But then I kind of wrote out this thing in the Discord of like, I don't know, what is a horror game? What is a traditional horror game? And I immediately threw out BioShock as being a horror game because you finished it.
Jeff was right.
Which Jeff does not play or finish horror games. So now I'm dabbling in this idea of perhaps writing one about what do we expect from our horror video games, and if is there a delineation between horror and creepy, and if so, what that is. So no guarantees that's what I end up releasing, but anyway, newsletter, christianspicer.substack.com, and that's the kind of thing they're conversational in nature. It's free to subscribe. Check it out.
I am on the socials as Jeff Cannata, at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. You can hear me talk about other things on other shows if you're so inclined. I have a movie review podcast called The Film Cast. You can find that wherever you get podcasts. Also, a science comedy show where you can learn something and laugh along the way. It's called We Have Concerns. Find it at wehaveconcerns.com. And the book club, super fun. Lana Bashinsky and I talking about the Malazan Book of the Fallen. We're on book 7. It's so great. So good. So good. You can find that on my YouTube, which is youtube.com/KanataJeff. Or you can be a patron and get the audio version. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Anthony, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. New Apple TV Plus show, Disclaimer, just started. First two episodes, I believe, out. I have seen them all. It is fantastic. It is, I'm sure, going to win a bunch of Emmys, or at least be nominated for them. I was very much looking forward to the show. It's created by Alfonso Cuarón, famous director, most people probably know from Gravity, but Children of Men, made the third Harry Potter. He's made a lot of different stuff. I was actually super excited because one of my favorite cinematographers, his name's Bruno Delbonnel, is working on it. It is a really tense character drama. It's got Cate Blanchett in it. It's got Kevin Kline in it. Sacha Baron Cohen is in it. But the kind of general gist is that Cate Blanchett plays this character, this journalist whose job has basically been to expose people, get them canceled, so to speak. But then kind of a dark secret from her past comes to life and maybe she's going to get canceled. It's not what you think throughout the whole show. It is crazy how it kind of develops and goes to these interesting places, but at the same time, even if you're not as gripped by the story, because it is kind of that sensational tabloid stuff, it's beautifully shot, and the acting across the board is exceptional. Kevin Klein, in my opinion, is really, really good. I think if anybody's going to win something from it, I think Kevin Klein will. It is a great show, and the first two episodes are available on Apple TV+.
There you go. It's called Disclaimer. It's on Apple TV+. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
For the Spice Man Larmo, which you can pre-order right now. It's only $98. And it comes with five voices. So there's Spice Man, the Spice Man, Sore Throat Spice Man. Ooh, my voice sure do hurt from doing this, man. And Mark from Marketing, no, actually. Is
Mark
there.
From Marketing is there. No, it's one voice, five volume levels.
It knows if you're asleep, and it doesn't care! That's what it does. No, my parting gift is, I mentioned this when they had just released a couple of singles. The Linda Linda's new album is out now in full, called No Obligation. That title track, No Obligation, is incredible, but the whole album is really great. They have a song featuring Weird Al Yankovic, Mr. Kanata, and it's not Love a funny him. Song. He's what? Just playing accordion in it.
Yeah,
it's great. He's a wonderful musician. The album's fantastic. They just got off their big summer tour, opening for Green Day. The Linda Lindas are great. This sophomore album from them, No Obligation, shows a lot of growth and a lot of variety, and I think folks would love it.
There you go. My parting gift is a new movie that is on Netflix. It's called It's What's Inside. My recommendation, ladies and gentlemen, is to watch this without knowing anything about it. Trust me, it's a wild ride. There's a kind of a sci-fi premise-ish, fantastical premise that is revealed pretty early on. And trust me that it's not something you've seen before and not something you've seen handled in this kind of way. And it's really, really fun. I enjoyed that. There's, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but man, is it delightful. R-rated, you know, it's definitely not for kids, but it is it's a wild ride and a pretty clever first film for a director. Just comes out of the gate being really, really bold, really confident with a vision and doing something that is kind of a high wire act of potential confusion for the audience. But man, awesome. Check it out. It's What's Inside on Netflix. All right. We also got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Eric, who says, "What's up, gamers? I'm writing to recommend the animated series Scavenger's Reign. Originally an Adult Swim series, it's available on Max and Netflix. 12 episodes. So often, science fiction is filled with recognizable analogs to earthly creatures and stories. That's a space bat. That's a space worm. That's a space wizard. Scavenger's Reign is a truly imaginative show, putting its survivors on a truly alien planet with sights wonderful and terrifying in equal measure, rendered in truly beautiful art reminiscent of the French artist Mobius. The creatures are so different from what we're used to that it becomes a challenge to guess what they might do. I don't even want to hint at what's out there. The story hits all the emotional beats you'd expect, but twists them enough to be surprising. It's human survival in the most alien of circumstances and absolutely should not be missed. It's a genuine animation classic. The co-creator has a new show on the way too, Common Side Effects. If it's half as good as Scavenger's Reign, it'll be worth following. Eric." Thanks, Eric. I am a huge fan of Scavenger's Reign. I think it is everything you said and more. One of the best shows of the year. Undoubtedly one of my favorite animated things I've ever seen. And you're right, man. It creates an ecosystem that is completely original, wildly inventive, interconnected in a way that most science fiction things aren't. Harrowing, beautiful, incredible. Scavenger's Reign. Check it out on Max or Netflix. All right. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, please send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send them. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Anthony Taormina and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can get merchandise for the show, like the t-shirt I'm wearing and the hat Christian's wearing, over at our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons at patreon.com/dlcpod. They make this show possible, their support. Please consider it. If it puts you in any kind of financial distress, of course, we don't want you to support us. But if you have a few dollars you can send our way every month, it means a lot, and it means the show gets to continue. So head over to patreon.com/dlcpod and see the cool perks that you can earn for supporting the show and making sure we get to keep making these. Thank you, patrons, for your support. All right, we'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.